Topic number 2. On February 7, 2 days after the disappearance of the Kissinger jet over the North Atlantic, Megan Marshak emerged out of hiding. She was seen briefly in New York and was photographed wearing a raccoon coat. That was the last time she was seen in public. That night, she and David Rockefeller boarded one of David Rockefeller's private jets and took off for London. Arriving in London the morning of February the 8th, local time, they headed for separate destinations. She went to a location in the western end of London, while he had business in the Seven Oaks section of South London. Early the following morning, David Rockefeller received an urgent message to go to Megan's location in the west end of London. There had been some trouble. Arriving there, he saw for himself. Megan Ruth Marshak, the only known witness to the actual murder of Nelson Rockefeller, was dead. She had died as Rockefeller had, with a single bullet in the forehead. Megan Marshak was far less well known in England than she had become here in America, but the psychological profile of David Rockefeller would show that his reaction in this new crisis would be much the same as it had been when his brother had been murdered. David Rockefeller would insist upon overseeing arrangements to make sure that the public did not learn that Megan Marshak had been shot to death. And so he stayed on the scene just long enough to become a target himself. Within a few hours, the body of Megan Marshak was on its way to a morgue in northeast London without identification of any kind. But then David Rockefeller died in the same way, a single bullet to the head. Early that afternoon, February 9, David Rockefeller's body was placed aboard the private jet that had brought him and Megan Marshak to London the previous day. The jet took off for the United States. Just as the Kissinger jet had done 4 days earlier, it was running a gauntlet of surveillance by Russian Cosmospheres. And apparently, the Russians did not know that David Rockefeller was already dead as his jet streaked westward across the North Atlantic. At a point within 100 miles of the last known location of the Kissinger jet, all contact was abruptly lost with the jet carrying David Rockefeller's body, and the jet never arrived at its destination. On Sunday morning, February 11, Ponchita Pierce was seen on her television program by viewers of New York's Channel 4, WNBC. But the program was on tape, as usual. Ponchita Pierce herself was nowhere to be found. The previous evening, she had released her statement to the press about her actions on the evening of Nelson Rockefeller's death and had raised all sorts of new questions in the process. And since that time, Ponchita Pierce has been missing. Meanwhile, her television program is going on each week just as usual. She is said to have already taped programs until sometime in May. When questioned, her office has been saying lately that she is on vacation, quote unquote. The same thing is now being said of Megan Marshak at her office, on vacation, quote unquote. On the evening of February 13, the body of Hugh Morrow, the longtime Rockefeller family spokesman, was discovered. Following the death of Nelson Rockefeller, it was Morrow who was given the heaviest responsibility for carrying out the cover-up campaign. Now the death of Morrow himself is a subject of cover-up efforts. Morrow died of a bullet between the eyes on February 13th, and that is the real reason why we are hearing no new pronouncements from him these days. But his office claims that he is, quote, on vacation, unquote. Early Saturday morning, February 17th, the third generation of the Rockefeller dynasty came to an end. Lawrence Rockefeller died in the same manner as Pope John Paul I did last October, of a bullet to the nape of the neck. And the next morning, both Lawrence Rockefeller and Hugh Morrow were cremated. In my appearance of February 15 on the Ray Bream radio show in Los Angeles, I mentioned all of these missing persons, except for Lawrence Rockefeller, who was still alive then. 2 days later, on the Bob Snyder show in Tampa, Florida, I listed them all and stated how long each had been missing. And according to the New York Post for February 15, 1979, it was claimed that Rockefeller security aides Andy Hoffman and William Keogh as well as chauffeur Lonnie Wilshire, cannot be found. My friends, according to high intelligence, what has just taken place is nothing less than a bloody coup d'etat involving the real rulers of America, and those responsible are none other than those former allies of the Rockefellers, the new Bolsheviks. Now the plundering of the Rockefeller family fortune is beginning, without the Rockefeller fourth generation suspecting a thing. After all, as I have always made clear in the past, the fourth generation Rockefellers were not party to the machinations of the four brothers. As a result, they are not aware of the true implications of the recent upheavals that have wiped out the third generation brothers, and they are being duped into public silence about these chilling events in the mistaken belief that silence is in their own best interest. The fact is that their silence is plain into the hands of those who want to loot the Rockefellers of their wealth, and it is also serving the interests of those who are working feverishly to throw the United States into the fires of dictatorship and war, the new Bolsheviks. During the recent past, the four Rockefeller brothers made one final great mistake that has now cost them their lives. That mistake was brought on by panic over a year and a half ago. In a stunning upset on September 27, 1977, the United States was defeated by Russia in the most decisive battle of the 20th century. It was the still-secret Battle of the Harvest Moon in space, history's first true space battle. In a single blow, the Russians had undone the Machiavellian-Rockefeller two-pronged strategy for world domination, and now it was Russia that was suddenly calling the shots. The Rockefeller brothers knew they were in deep, deep trouble. In a state of near panic, the four Rockefeller brothers began casting about for a way to stave off Russia. And that is when they made their final, fatal mistake. Certain of their advisors reminded them that the Rockefeller-Soviet alliance was not really with Russia itself, but with the Bolsheviks in Russia. The new Russian regime had already begun weeding out and expelling the old Bolsheviks from Russia. The advisors argued that since they were the real allies of the Rockefellers, and since they knew Russia, the old Bolsheviks should be welcomed to America and placed rapidly in positions of power. In their panicky need to do something fast, the Rockefeller brothers accepted this line of reasoning, but in doing so they were forgetting the true nature of their alliance with the Bolsheviks. When I recorded AUDIO LETTER 7 in December 1975, over 3 years ago, the long-standing secret Rockefeller-Soviet alliance was still functioning. In that AUDIO LETTER I explained the nature of the alliance. It was an alliance between corporate socialists on one hand, the Rockefellers, and the state socialists on the other, the rulers of the Soviet Union. As I explained in AUDIO LETTER 7, corporate socialism and state socialism are two sides of the same coin. Both are systems for amassing great wealth and power into the hands of only a few people. So an alliance between the rulers of two separate countries having these two systems is natural. But what the Rockefellers forgot, their fatal mistake, is that corporate socialism and state socialism cannot coexist in the same society. Corporate socialism has as its goal giant monopolies that are completely exempt from governmental regulation. State socialism seeks the exact opposite, that is, total governmental control and regulation of everything and everyone. To bring them together under the same roof is to guarantee a head-on collision between the two. And that, my friends, is what is beginning to happen now. It was in AUDIO LETTER 29 for December 1977 that I was first able to reveal that a new Bolshevik revolution was getting underway here in the United States with the aid of the Rockefeller brothers. By the time I recorded AUDIO LETTER 38 last September, the handwriting was already on the wall for the four Rockefeller brothers. Already the oldest of the brothers, John D. III, had suddenly vanished from the scene. And in AUDIO LETTER 38 I pointed out that, quote, "Increasingly it is not the Rockefeller brothers who are using the Bolsheviks, but the other way around. Soon the remaining three Rockefeller brothers will fade from the scene. but that will not undo the cancer of Bolshevism with which they have infected the West. End of quotation from AUDIO LETTER 38. The kingpin among the new Bolsheviks in America was to be Henry Kissinger. He was Nelson Rockefeller's protege for 25 years, but he played both sides of every street. With his easy access to the plans, the personnel, and the resources of the Rockefeller Empire, Kissinger was the most important single person among the new Bolshevik faction in America. Kissinger truly believed that he could replace Nelson Rockefeller and someday become president of the world. My friends, the known witness to Nelson Rockefeller's death, Megan Marshak, as well as others close to that case, have vanished from the scene. The entire pattern of events, except for Kissinger's disappearance, is typical of Bolshevik purges, which always include measures to cover their tracks. The new Bolsheviks are now in control of America through their grip on the United States government, but it still remains for them to spread and consolidate their power base. And to this end they will perpetuate the fiction as long as possible that David Rockefeller, Lawrence Rockefeller, and Henry and Nancy Kissinger are still alive. In this way, actions can be taken in the name of these other people that would not be possible if they were known to be dead. Surviving members of the Rockefeller family have been led to believe that their own security, even their physical security, depends upon their maintaining silence about the events of recent days. But the truth is that their silence is being used against them. Unlike the late four brothers, the fourth generation Rockefellers do not wield great influence over the far-flung Rockefeller cartel of banks, multinational corporations, foundations, and so on. They are largely at the mercy of managers of all these assets. By their silence, they are leaving many of these managers with the power to plunder the collapsing Rockefeller empire of its riches. To preserve their power governmentally and otherwise, it is crucial right now that the Bolsheviks suppress any news of the disappearances I have told you about. Therefore, doubles or look-alikes may begin to appear on the scene for these people. What is amazing, especially in the case of Kissinger, is that they have been able to stifle public questions for so long in his absence. But the Bolsheviks know that doubles fool only the public. An intimate friend of David Rockefeller, for example, would not be deceived for long in a face-to-face meeting, and so doubles would be used only as a last resort. My friends, with the four Rockefeller brothers out of the picture, and with Henry Kissinger gone, a new ad hoc gang of four has emerged who are now in control of the United States government. These four are Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jimmy Carter's National Security Advisor. In 1973, Brzezinski did the legwork for David Rockefeller in organizing the Trilateral Commission. Like the late Henry Kissinger, he is foreign-born. W. Michael Blumenthal, Secretary of the Treasury, Trilateral Commission member and foreign-born. As a former head of Bendix Corporation, Blumenthal has important ties to the Rockefeller corporate aristocracy. This is particularly true in the area of arms and defense, which is the real topic of his present trip to Red China. Harold Brown, Secretary of Defense, Trilateral Commission member, and James Schlesinger, Secretary of Energy. Schlesinger is not an official member of the Trilateral Commission, but he is of like mind with the others. His approach is control from the top and heavy governmental regulation of everything. Schlesinger formerly headed the Atomic Energy Commission, the CIA, and the Department of Defense. One common thread that runs through the background of all these men is their preoccupation with matters of warfare, weaponry, and international maneuvering. In every possible way, they are all trying to hurry along the Bolshevik strategy for a nuclear first strike against Russia. My friends, all of them are very dangerous men. But the new gang of four cannot truly replace the four Rockefeller brothers. For the first time ever, these men no longer have anyone to give them instructions and pave their way. They are trying to carry out the very detailed plans which have already been set in motion, but they are doing it without the same power base which the four Rockefeller brothers had at their disposal. And so the question is, can they be stopped? Topic number 3. Over 100 years ago, the United States of America began falling under the spell of Rockefeller power. Slowly at first, but then faster and faster, John D. Rockefeller Sr. moved to the head of the line of America's robber barons. As the 19th century was on the wane, the Rockefellers were forming alliances with other powerful groups, not only here in America, but overseas. Through their influence on America's leaders, they began turning the United States away from the virtues extolled by George Washington and toward the vicious ways of Machiavelli. More than 80 years ago, the Spanish-American War broke out as the shadow of things to come. The war was brought about by the United States, not Spain, yet most Americans were lured into supporting America's acts of shame. America began to trade national honor for prestige as a world power. In this way, the stage was being set for the 20th century. It was to be the century of oil politics, of war after war, each worse than the one before, and ever-expanding Rockefeller power. In all of this, the United States of America was to be no more than a springboard in the Rockefeller plan to finally control the whole world. And so, as Rockefeller power became ever more complete in America, our country's behavior became increasingly foreign to our own traditions and values. As a nation, we began to court our enemies while punishing our friends. The land of opportunity gradually was twisted into the land of regulations, and the original American concept that all men are equal in the sight of the law was gradually warped into the idea that all human beings have to be the same in all respects. Our value as individuals began fading from our own minds, so that we might be molded more perfectly into a society of perfect slaves. Down through the years, millions of Americans have been alert enough to feel at least vaguely that something was wrong. But the real source and reason for all these disturbing trends was always kept hidden. And so there was no one to challenge or hinder the master program of Rockefeller conquest. In recent years, America's drift toward nuclear war has also been more and more apparent. But here, too, Americans sat paralyzed as the Rockefeller planners dragged us closer and closer to the fire. For decades now, most Americans have fallen into one of two groups. By far the larger group has consisted of that great silent majority, so-called. They have been silent about Rockefeller power and intrigue because they did not know about it. The other main group, much smaller, has consisted of those who did know about Rockefeller power and felt it was too great to be challenged. Down through the years, only scattered individuals have both known the truth and dared to actively oppose what was happening to America. And those few, my friends, have always been easy to isolate and neutralize in various ways. But now, for the first time in a century, the situation has changed. Almost overnight, the centralized control of the worldwide power of the Rockefeller Empire has been shattered. The four Rockefeller brothers of the third generation are no more, and there is no one who can really fill their shoes. But the new gang of four, Brzezinski, Brown, Blumenthal, and Schlesinger, are eager to set themselves up as our undisputed rulers. Left to themselves, they will lead America into thermonuclear national suicide. But their dreams of replacing the four Rockefeller brothers are insane. What will they do, my friends, when it becomes known in the corridors of power worldwide that David Rockefeller is no more? Who will hold the intimate private dinner gatherings with the powerful here and abroad, by which David Rockefeller kept everyone on the same track? Who will take his place, giving word from on high on big policy shifts? Who will keep the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Council of the Americas humming along in unison as he did? Who will coordinate the actions of the top 200 industrial corporations and banks of the world as he did? Who will guide the policies of the Business Council or of the Business Roundtable as David Rockefeller did? Who will take his place in assigning tasks to his former private detective agency, the CIA? Who will decide the global issues that he did and force unified action to implement those decisions? Brzezinski? Blumenthal? Brown? Schlesinger? It is in the nature of people to form their own opinions about things if they are not forced to accept and implement certain policies. And so think of the free-for-all that will soon start developing behind the scenes on all sides. Within the industrial community, for example, honest differences of opinion will start cropping up as to how to handle new situations as they arise. Without David Rockefeller to act as arbitrator, these differences will not just go away. Industrial leaders will begin to break up into factions built around different policies, but no faction will be able to impose its will on all the others as David Rockefeller did. And so inevitably, that phenomenon which John D. Rockefeller Sr. denounced as a sin, quote-unquote, will begin to rear its battered head. It's called competition. If we can avoid the suicidal disaster of nuclear war I, the same thing will also begin happening in all other areas of life. In banking, in business, in politics, even in religion, a new freedom of independent thought may yet be reborn if war can be prevented between Russia and the United States. Soon the inevitable internal conflict here in the United States will be getting underway. On one side, there are the corporate socialists of the now headless Rockefeller cartel. On the other side, there are the Bolshevik state socialists who are now in control of the United States government. Right now, the Rockefeller corporate socialist empire is still more powerful than the United States government. If they wake up in time, they could put a stop to the Bolshevik plan, which is now directed at them. And if the people also awaken, then the inevitable rebirth of competitive enterprise could lead gradually to a new era of freedom and prosperity in the West. By breaking their silence about recent events, the fourth generation Rockefellers could help bring about this turn of events. As the conflict builds up between the corporate socialists and the Bolsheviks, Jimmy Carter will be caught in the middle. Already he is racked by leukemia and by cancer in his head, in his intestines, and now in his lungs and bladder. If he does not die first, watch for him to flee from the presidency under these pressures. When that happens, my friends, you will be faced with a choice which you cannot avoid. Carter's hasty departure from the presidency will be the first public sign that the rout of the Bolsheviks is beginning here in America. At that point, you must decide to do one of two things, to act or not to act. If you decide to act to help save America from the Bolshevik nightmare, you will be choosing freedom, life, and the survival of Christianity. But if you decide to sit back and do nothing, you will be casting your vote for Bolshevik control over America. And if you do that, you will be choosing slavery, death, and the satanic hell of Bolshevism. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.